Well, good Wednesday morning, everyone. Thank you for joining Voices of Montana. Man, has it been a hot summer or what? I am so glad that we can be confident about our power because I've got to keep my AC running. You guys are probably the same way. Imagine us being in a place that doesn't have certainty around our power supply. And we think maybe that's just a third world country somewhere and they have this interrupted power supply or no power supply, but that's actually states. In fact, Louisiana, Maine, West Virginia, Alaska, Texas even, they're all on the top of this list of the most unstable states by duration and frequency for their power supply. Can you imagine that? Well, I love having confidence in our power supply, but that doesn't happen by accident. It takes quality people, stable companies, regulators, all doing their best to take care of us and provide us power. But that doesn't come without controversy. And that's what we're going to talk today. Today on Voices of Montana, we're talking to Brian Bird, President and CEO of Northwestern Energy. It's been a warm summer. I bet the seasonal demand on power has been over the top. Well, we've got all that going on, but we also got a handful of hot issues to talk about, and that's going to be the conversation on Voices of Montana. I trust you've had a great summer. I know it goes by so fast for us. It really has been a hot, warm summer. I know it's putting pressure on our power supply. And then over and above that pressure just from the season that we're in, we have those growing demands, not including data centers. Growing demands of power. We've got this whole conversation about a merger that we want to get into today. We've got data centers hanging out there.
Four-letter word.
Yeah. Well, it has become that. We want to make sure we have confidence in having an affordable, reliable power supply. And then we want to make sure that we're making strategic investments and planning for our future. And that's well, we're going to talk to Mr. Brian Bird, President and CEO of Northwestern Energy. Brian, welcome to Voices of Montana.
Thank you, Steve.
How has your summer been, Brian?
It's been busy. This is certainly a full-time job year-round. And as of today, it's been 1 year since we announced our merger plans with Black Hills, and so obviously we're still waiting for all our necessary approvals. The last one remaining, of course, is Montana. So it's been a year. It's been a very, very busy year, but obviously a busy summer as well.
Well, we're going to dive into the merger conversation because I want you to be able to update us on that, but just talk about how the system's functioning. And what I learned is maybe in July we had the fourth hottest July on record in parts of Montana. It's a hot summer, and that does put pressure. How's the system operating? Any concerns we need to be aware of?
Well, actually, it's been operating quite well. We had a summer peak over 2,000 megawatts. It's the biggest summer peak we've had on our balancing authority. We get certainly to that level in winter peaks, but our summer peak and winter peaks can be about the same now, your point about how hot it's been. And the system's been fine. I think, Steve, I've been talking to you for many, many years about resource adequacy and, you know, added Colstrip and adding Yellowstone County generating station certainly allows us all to sleep a little bit better on the hottest days and the coldest nights in Montana.
Well, we know you have a team out there that, in not to be sarcastic, keeps our lights on, and they do it consistently. And when you have trouble areas, they're resolved. We don't even feel some of the glitches that you have to manage in an extensive system like that. And we appreciate your people doing that work for us every day. Brian, let's talk about the business decision behind the merger. I my background, and I know you've got a lot of background in business and finance. And so there's a critical business decision behind the proposed merger. Let's talk a little bit about that why business decision and then give us an update on where that stands.
Yeah, I think both we and Black Hills were kind of, I think they were the 34th largest investor owned. I think we were 37th out of about 40. And so both really small utilities in the grand scheme of things. And as you might guess, many other utilities are growing much faster than we are. And what that does, those larger utilities, because of their scale and financial strength, can buy cheaper, they can borrow for less, and they can stand financial shocks to their system much easier than smaller utilities. I just keep thinking back to Hawaiian Electric with their wildfire. They almost went into bankruptcy. Or other utilities like Xcel, much larger entities, was never an issue, right? So the scale that comes from this transaction is huge. It's huge for the company. It's going to be great for customers, too. And ultimately, what I mean by that is there are going to be some cost savings from putting two companies together. I always like to pick on our auditors. We both use Deloitte as our auditors. I don't expect that we'll pay them what we currently pay and what Black Hills paid added together. It'll be something less than that. And that would be what we talk about, trying to work with vendors and others that we should be able to save some money. Being on the New York Stock Exchange or NASDAQ, we're going to only be listed in one place. We're going to save money by putting our two companies together. Those savings ultimately accrue to customers the next time you have a rate review after the two companies have combined. Those types of savings get captured. Also, I would tell you the two extremely well-run utilities, best practices amongst the two companies, will accrue to customers as well. So it's a good thing. It certainly strengthens our balance sheet, and it positions us better to grow as companies. But we'll still, even with eight states, in Montana will certainly be the largest, about a third of the overall company after that. But we'll have about 2 million customers, and I get reminded by the big utilities, they'll tell me they can have 2 million customers in one city. So we'll still be a relatively small utility even after the merger, but certainly that increased scale will help us as a company on a combined basis, and ultimately that will accrue to customers.
I can see the cost savings, and when you save costs in an operational standpoint, that does flow down to us as ratepayers. One of the questions I have with that now larger infrastructure that you have to manage, there's planning you have to do, there's investments you have to make. Will Montana still be a priority state? I think we're asking that question. Will we still matter in terms of the strategic direction of the new utility and the investments that are made?
Absolutely. And I'd say this, Steve, for two reasons. It already is still a third. With eight states, that's going to be obviously the biggest state of the states that we have. And I see a huge amount of opportunity to grow in Montana. And we have a large new load tariff that we put in front of the commission. We certainly want to talk to them about that and how our ability to serve large customers that come into the state. We've done a good job of dealing with resource adequacy on the generation side. But there's still a significant amount of investment that we need to make on a transmission side, not only within our existing system, but regional transmission opportunities that we've certainly been talking about in the state. And so as a state of the eight states, where we both have electric and gas in Montana, it is still going to be a big part. And I wouldn't be surprised if it becomes a bigger part of the overall portfolio over time.
That's good to hear, Brian. I appreciate that. Talk to us about where this stands. I know you've gotten federal approval, shareholders have approved, you've had other states give you the thumbs up. Is Montana the lone holdout, and what's the status of that?
Yeah, the only remaining approval we need today, both Nebraska and South Dakota have approved, and all federal approvals now have been received, and so we're waiting on Montana and the Montana Public Service Commission. We did briefing back in mid-July, and typically there's a 90 days after that time period for them to make a decision. That puts us mid-October. I believe there's an ability for them to extend that by 30 days. So the belief is somewhere between mid-October and mid-November we should have a decision. And the other two states have made those decisions. I think we certainly have settlements with the major interveners in the case. And so the hope is they can do that sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
There are benefits that will accrue to customers in $10 million up front. And obviously, like I said, the sooner we can close this, the sooner those benefits and the savings we can accrue start coming to customers. So we hope a decision could be made relatively soon.
We appreciate your diligence on that, and I'm hopeful our Public Service Commission will work in a timely manner and be thoughtful about that decision they're making. Another decision that we're all wrestling with relates to data centers. I think Cody just shook in the studio. It's kind of become this point of protest across the nation. I find that very intriguing, and I have some theories on why I think that's playing out that way. But in a practical sense, you have to manage that, because there's a power supply that is a part of this data center development in your service territory. You know what the concerns are. People are concerned about the increase in their energy bill. There's other concerns not related to power, water, other things, land use, compatibility, other kinds of things. But you've made a proposal to the Public Service Commission that you think is a thoughtful approach as a utility in response to data center development. Talk to us about the large new load tariff rule and where that stands.
Yeah, first of all, on data centers, I heard earlier potentially deemed a four-letter word. I don't certainly see it that way. I think I understand the concerns that folks have, and I particularly think one thing to think about, most data centers in the U.S. that exist today were put in urban areas. Matter of fact, 7/8 of the data centers, I think there's about 4,000, were in urban areas. But now they're coming to rural communities, and those communities may have different desires, of course, than urban communities. But I think only a third of future data centers are planned for urban areas. So that means they're coming to more rural areas. And so I think what one of the issues is, there's many developers that put forth a plan to come to communities, but you don't know who the customer necessarily is yet. And that concerns folks that, hey, we don't know who the party is, and I understand those concerns. So I think data centers need to do a better job communicating. We utilities need to do a better job working with those communities and helping the developers themselves. But we need to get to a point where folks know who they're dealing with. But once they find out that, there are many benefits that data centers provide to these communities. And so obviously local tax revenues in terms of property tax, job creation, the hyperscalers are very good from a charitable giving perspective. So, and I think ultimately the infrastructure that's built and leading to the large new load tariff, what's changed is data centers had, you know, they were large companies. They came in and said, hey, we want a deal. Give us good pricing. Give us tax breaks. Give us these things. And I think that's changing. I think what's happening now is instead of being a price maker, they're becoming a price taker. They're signing pledges that we're not going to pass on costs to existing customers. We signed that pledge. And our large load tariff is designed to do exactly that. We and the Montana Public Service Commission ultimately will approve, I believe, a large new load tariff that will protect customers. And I think what you're starting to see, Steve, in those places where they have quite a bit of data center load,
yeah,
they're actually showing benefits to customers, benefits in terms of reliability. They're actually improving the infrastructure that's serving all customers. And they're also seeing benefits from a price perspective. So I will tell you, those folks in the PJM market, I think the kind of the Midwest and East Coast areas, they've struggled because of capacity problems, and those prices have gone up for customers, not just data centers, but for all customers. But we can't paint the whole United States with that brush. This large new load tariff, and from our perspective, we've seen what other states have done to protect their customers, and we've effectively duplicated that with this tariff. So, and again, commission has to approve it before we can serve large loads, particularly those greater than 50 megawatts. And I think collectively we'll work to protect customers.
We're going to take
so a... I'm pretty confident that we can do that.
Well, welcome back to Voices of Montana. We're talking to Brian Bird, President and CEO of Northwestern Energy. Brian, thank you again for joining us. We were just in this, the throes of a conversation on data centers, and the reference was there's concern out there about, well, who the ultimate user of the data center will be. And I actually think it's all of us. We just have this thirst for information at our fingertips 24/7 at the speed of light. We are, our economy and us as consumers are driving this development and this demand. But I want to put that in kind of context. And this context being, how many data center proposals are really active in Montana right now? And is your phone, Brian, ringing off the hook? Is there, what's that pipeline look like?
Yeah, I would say, and again, we have non-disclosure agreements in terms of identifying who folks are. We have 12 folks that, both between Montana and South Dakota, I'd argue it's about maybe half of in each state. So let's say six folks that in a, incremental to the development agreements that we have with named parties that are seriously looking at Montana. The three that we've talked about have development agreements have all been noted publicly. The developers are Quantica, Sabey, and Atlas. And what we'd like to do is try to reach with all three of them what's called an energy service agreement or a master service agreement to ultimately move forward with serving those customers. But we would need to take, and with a large load tariff, take that. They're all going to be more than 50 megawatts. And I think take those each to the Montana Public Service Commission to get not only approval of the tariff, but approval to serve under that tariff, these ESAs. So that's what we're working on as we sit here today with those three parties. The other ones, until they get to development agreements, we don't really talk about them much because they can fall away and that list can change.
Yep.
People can come on, people can fall off once they have to come up with some money or provide security. So once you get to development agreements, it gets a bit more serious.
Brian, educate me a little bit better on this. So under the new large load tariff rule, would these developments be required to provide their own source of power, compensate for new infrastructure development that you might have to consider for transmission? Am I thinking of that right? Is that some of the framework of that tariff rule?
Yeah, the easier part is they're going to have to pay for, let's just say, the transmission and any distribution they need, primarily transmission interconnection. Certainly going to have to pay for that. The generation side, one of the issues we currently have is we don't have a lot of excess capacity to serve them from a generation perspective. And our current rules in terms of how we can procure generation for them, we know we do an IRP, Steve, then we do what's called a RFP, a request for proposal. Then we have to do a pre-approval filing to put that in front of the commission. And, we didn't do that pre-approval with Yellowstone County, and ultimately we may not get all of what we asked for
in terms
of the investment in that plant. And so we skipped that because we felt we needed that plant sooner than waiting for that process. And that was during COVID. It was a difficult, scary time. So, but that takes a lot of time. So we've said early on to do much of the generation, they're going to have to bring their own generation unless the rules change. And they'd rather be served by utility, a portfolio of assets, but in doing so, they better be willing to pay for their fair share. And I think you're seeing elsewhere in the country where people adopt these tariffs that protect customers, they're ultimately providing benefits to customers because improve reliability on the system. But typically, and this happens in Montana, our commercial customers subsidize partially our residential customers. So the hope is we'd see some of that too for our residential customers.
You know, one of that, we had someone text in a question for us, which I think relates to this, and they wondered, what is the feasibility of small-scale nuclear? I know that's a topic, and it feels like it's 20 years out, but maybe it's in 2 years, 3 years. Give us a sense of how that might meet demand.
Yeah, I will say this. I mean, we think of Colstrip as an energy hub. We think there's going to be transmission that's going to be built to Colstrip, and Colstrip's going to be around long after the coal plant's not. But our view is we'd like to replace Colstrip with something cleaner, and if you were to replace it today, you're going to build natural gas. Now, natural gas is twice as clean as coal, but as you know, it still produces carbon and is not as clean as nuclear. Nuclear is carbon-free. And so we'd like to see Colstrip as a bridge to ultimately build nuclear. And so we're one of the smallest utilities talking about this. That's one of the problems. It's still expensive today. It's still a nascent technology, the small modular reactors. But I think two things. I think the larger utilities are starting to take the lead on this topic. I think the federal government is starting to provide support to nuclear. I think it's a bit of a bipartisan issue, which is helpful. And I actually think data centers, as you know, these are trillion-dollar market cap companies. The whole industry, investor-owned utility industry, is not a trillion-dollar market cap. So, but data centers could help finance these more expensive plants, and they want to be green long-term. Understand that fossil fuels are going to be around a little longer here until these technologies take off, but nuclear is certainly an opportunity, something we see as a potential goal of replacing coal strip at some point in time with nuclear. Now, you asked how soon. Boy, it's taking some time. Yep. I think you'll see some stuff in the 2030s, and I think it starts to take off in the 2035s. But, Steve, I think there's another thing going on out there from a technology perspective, long-duration storage. If we can get to long-duration storage, I think that really helps other renewables be more economic. And so I think these are competing technologies, but they certainly both could be very, very helpful to us as a long-term as a utility.
So that would support solar, wind, that can be intermittent if you're able to store that at its peak and then use it. Am I thinking of that right?
You're absolutely. But you could store instead of for 4 hours, with the goal is can we have 100-hour storage. Our problem in Montana, we don't have 4-hour issues. We got 4-day issues, right, with cold weather and hot weather. We need long-duration storage, or you need something like a gas plant or a nuclear plant that are like our coal plants today, 24/7 dispatchable resources. And so that's one of the beauties of nuclear. It is the cleanest way to replace the exact same characteristics of a coal plant.
So, Brian, I want to move us a little past data center discussion, but I know that's the hot topic, and it's a real deal, and there's development and investment being made, and we're all responding and planning for that. But beyond that, there's the regular business that shows up every day and turns on the lights or turns on their equipment. They want to know that they're going to have a reliable, affordable power supply to drive their business or their home. In fact, Todd O'Hare, with CEO of Montana Chamber, will join me on Friday. And one of the topics on their top five priorities in the future for Montana business is energy. And they're hearing more and more that businesses are saying, hey, we've got a power need. How is that need going to be met? So when we come back, I want to start that kind of let's think forward together conversation. How do we make sure that we're in a solid position to meet the demands of our growing economy? Well and above what data centers brings to the equation, I think data centers can be kind of that impetus that pokes us and says, we need to be thinking strategic long-term about where our economy's going. So I'll be talking to Todd about that on Friday, but I want to pull you into that conversation. You are good, Brian, at forward thinking. That's why you're in the role that you are with Northwestern Energy and your experience. Are we going to be ready for our power future? I'm your guest host on Voices of Montana, Steve Arviscow, and I'm honored that Tom relinquishes the microphone every once in a while, and I get to come in and hang out with Cody and have great conversations with you in Montana about important issues. And this morning, today, we're talking with Brian Bird, Northwestern Energy's president and CEO. Brian, thank you for giving us your time. When we went to break, we got a phone call, and Cody did a good job of kind of weeding through some of the questions that were coming from that call. And the bottom line of the question that came in was, how can I have a ironclad guarantee that my rates are not going to go up? And I'm smiling a little bit because nothing in life has a guarantee like that. But Brian, what sideboards are there in place that a consumer needs to understand that helps moderate rates or helps guide rates that they might pay?
Yeah, but how we actually collect rates is we have to file with the commission a rate case. Here's our costs, and take that plus a return on the equity, if you will, that you would you invest in resources. That's the simplest way to describe it. And then that you take that and you spread that across your customers based upon how many kilowatt hours they use. This is on the electric side, of course. And so, you know, if our costs go up, like everyone else costs, you'd expect upward pressure on your bill. One thing we're proud of, and certainly a goal of ours, is to certainly be below the national average in terms of our price from our customers, and we are. You might guess that the California and the Northeast and parts of the Midwest certainly have higher rates than us, but we're in parts of the U.S. where we have good resources. But those costs are also hard to contain for a small utility who has more poles than customers. So, you know, to serve 75% of Montana, it takes expense to do that. And so we've done a nice job managing what's called our operating and maintenance expenses relative to the amount of kilowatt hours that we sell. We're as good as any of our peers on those measures, so we keep our costs down as best we can. And, you know, things like buying Colstrip, even the Avista piece, the 222 megawatts, paid zero for that.
Yep.
If we were to buy a gas plant to replace that, that's probably $600 million. And if you have just 30 years of depreciation, we get recovery of that depreciation each year. That's $20 million a year that customers would have to pay. So doing things like Colstrip, and I think the merger certainly as well, is because we over time those savings will accrue to customers. I feel very, very confident we're going to continue to stay well below the national average for decisions like that. But I think to say that we don't think that bills are going to stay flat, they're never going to go up, I cannot say that. I'd like to say that there will be less upward pressure on rates because of these decisions that we've been making.
Brian, let's talk about our energy future. In my previous life, and I'm supposed to be retired right now, and I'm enjoying this opportunity to have these conversations. In my previous world, though, I was trying to drive business and growth, and we'd have conversation about power supply and are we ready for the future? And at times you made me really nervous, Brian, about, man, are we going to have the supply that we need for growing industry? Because I wasn't doing my job if I wasn't attracting new private investment. And when with new private investment comes greater demand on supply. I know you made an investment in Colstrip thinking about the future. So talk to us a little bit about that forward thinking and then specifically about how Colstrip helps meet that future need.
Yeah, and Steve's talking to me about this, certainly in his old role for years. I talked to you about this, Steve, and we didn't have solutions. I think people forget that as far back as 2008, other than the non-regulated portion of Colstrip that we ultimately put into rates, prior to that, we owned no resources. We weren't allowed to have resources until legislation.
Right.
And so it wasn't until we added the Colstrip interests on 1-1 of 26 that we actually finally became resource adequate. And when I first started talking to you about these things, Steve, we didn't know what we would be able to do with Colstrip. And we've been fortunate. The Avista piece allowed us to get to resource adequate, and obviously that with Yellowstone County combined got us to resource adequate. So like I said earlier, we just sleep better that we've gotten there. We actually have some excess capacity. We are long energy at times, and we have good wind resources and such. We're long energy, but we're not always. Sometimes we're short, depending on the wind. But that capacity is the main thing that we need, and that's that 24/7 power when we need it most. And that Colstrip first piece was to get to resource adequate, and a lot of questions around the Puget piece. The Puget piece allowed us to go from 30% ownership to 55% ownership, because I think many people know this. The other owners in the plant were in Washington and Oregon, and their states didn't necessarily want to have coal-fired generation, and we were always concerned that they could vote to close down the plant. And so getting the Puget piece for us is to get to 55%, and no one was going to force us to shut down Colstrip, because it wasn't just to protect the new Avista piece, but our existing 222 megawatts that we had before the Avista piece. We needed to protect that, too. Can you imagine trying to serve customers on the hottest and coldest days without even that piece?
Right.
If the plant would have been shut down. So now We have certainly adequate resources at Colstrip to serve customers, and certainly combined with the Yellowstone County plant, we feel very, very good about being able to serve our customers.
Brian, how about transmission? You're developing power. You've got to move it to where it needs to go. That there's, I'm assuming, key investments in transmission. What have you been doing in that area, and where might that be headed?
Yeah, we're within our service territory and in our existing system and footprint, particularly south of Great Falls, you know, heading actually towards the Billings area. We've been upgrading lines there, and we've been up, the Bitterroot, we've been upgrading lines there. There's parts of Montana we continue to repower and improve the capacity of our lines. But that helps moving power within our system. We're also looking at regional transmission to actually move power in the state and out of the state more efficiently. You may recall a couple winters ago, we actually imported 50% of our needs. And our transmission constraints were relative at that time. And we realized we need to improve the capacity of flows in and out of the state. And that's going to benefit customers, because on those days when there's excess wind or solar, we can procure that cheaper than we can run plants. And the transmission, we have to have transmission, though, in order to move that power. And on days when we have excess power, we want to be able to sell it to others for the benefit of our customers. And if we can't move that because of the transmission system, that's not good either. So this is something I think certainly is a bipartisan issue. I think everybody should be behind increased transmission.
Absolutely.
To move all resources and be more economical. And so we're looking at North Plains Connector. I think people have heard of that project between Colstrip and the Dakotas, North Dakota. And then we're looking at some other opportunities in Montana. We call it the Montana to Idaho line, something that is important, I think, to complement the North Plains Connector line. And Path 8 that we currently use for the Colstrip transmission line, there's opportunities to increase capacity there. So we think these all make great sense from an investment perspective, and is ultimately going to make Montana, at least I'll say, more resilient in terms of the energy needs. And also, I think we'll have a lower all-in cost for customers, because we'll be able to take advantage of being able to buy power at lower costs and maybe selling our excess power at higher costs by being able to move power around.
Well, Brian, it has been an absolute pleasure having you on Voices of Montana, and I've always appreciated your work, because you're great forward thinking. And that forward thinking, I think, is serving our customers well. And I don't say that just to say that. I've witnessed it. I've heard you talk about the importance of being prepared for the future. And that's what I want to talk about. What's on the horizon that we need to understand? Are we going to be ready? Can we continue to grow? What does that look like from your chair?
Yeah, thanks, Steve. I appreciate your comments, by the way. I would say this. One thing we have to keep in mind, we had 20 years of relatively flat demand. You know, think transitioning to better lighting, energy efficiency, whatever those technologies, you know, moving to LEDs, that actually helped keep demand flat. And over that time period, we took opportunities to clean up our portfolio. I think you know we have one of the cleanest portfolios in the nation now in terms of hydro. Buying the hydro certainly helped us in that regard. But looking forward, we're going to see increased demand. And I hope there's another technology that helps us from an energy efficiency perspective, or maybe it's long-duration storage and those types of things that can maybe tamp down this demand. But if this demand is going to show up, we need to be prepared. First, I'll say, as the utility, from a planning perspective and an investment perspective, and be strong enough. I mean, that's another benefit of the merger here, is to be able to have the financial wherewithal to make these investments in generation and transmission that we're going to need to do on a going forward basis. I think secondarily, we're going to need to have legislatively, we're going to need to be able to move quicker. We're going to need to have decisions that come out of the MPSC in terms of, I talked about the IRP, RFP pre-approval. That's great when you have 20 years of flat demand. That's not if we want to continue to bring economic development to the state and meet the needs of these new customers who want to move faster. And so we need to think about doing things differently there. I also tell you, we're going to see technology continue to change our business, not just for how we deliver the power or the technology we have in our lines that we deal with from a wildfire perspective and all of those things to better protect our customers. But even how you interact with us is changing. Today, you can already work with Northwestern and see how you're using your energy. Because of the meters that we have out, AMI meters that we have out, you can start using that technology now. And so we encourage you to reach out and try and figure out how to use that. There's a great YouTube video that shows how to use that. So I think that is going to continue to improve, and that relationship you'll have with your utility because of this technology, you'll be able to find ways to save money. And then we also understand that there's a rising costs happening that in everyday products, and that's making people having a harder time to pay their energy bills. Even though it's a value perspective, Steve, it's still a fantastic value. And we can, for our average customer, you know, we can serve our average customer for about both gas and electric for about $6 to $8 on a daily basis. That's a fantastic value. But we understand still people have trouble paying their bills. We need to continue to find ways on a going forward basis that we can help those folks deal with those rising costs. So technology, planning ahead, we have to be ahead. We have to have resource adequacy to make sure in those hottest days and coldest days, we have to plan ahead. We have to do that faster. And by the way, in with the supply chain constraints today, that's another thing to add on, this timing to actually build stuff. It takes a while to get turbines. It takes a while to get transformers and other equipment because of this increased demand. So we have to move faster to meet our customers' needs. We can't fall behind. And I think making those investments in generation and transmission are going to be important. And I also think finding that new technology that's going to make even our service even that much less expensive than it would have been otherwise. And so there's a lot there, and I know we don't have a lot to talk about, time to talk about it, Steve, but that's what I would finish up with from looking forward.
I like your move faster. I think I would add to that move faster, move smarter. We want the Public Service Commission to be smart and thoughtful, but we do want them to work at the pace of industry and at the pace of growing Montana's economy and being faithful to the customer base. And I just have this notion that, and I can't ask regulators to do this, but it just seems like there needs to be a table of strategic thinkers thinking about Montana's energy future. I know you do that every day because you have a customer obligation, but there needs to be a table that says, are we prepared for our Montana energy future? And the regulators aren't about that necessarily. So I know you're doing that. Who else needs to be at that table? That's a really important consideration as Montana looks to address its energy future. Are we all sitting at the table thinking about that collectively so that we're going to be ready when we need to be ready? Brian, you've been...
Two things quick, Steve, real quick. I'd say this. First of all, the commission has an extremely tough job. It's a tough job in a flat demand. It's even tougher if we're moving faster. And secondarily, this isn't just a Montana issue. It is a national issue. I mean, all commissions are dealing with this issue, and everything's moving faster, as you know. But I also agree with you. We've all got to find a way to move quicker and be smarter about how we do it.
Absolutely. Thank Brian, thank you very much for being a part of Voices of Montana today. I appreciate that.
Thanks for joining us for the podcast. And join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.